Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. The United Fresh Retail Food Service Board and Nielsen IQ held their Fresh Facts on Retail Quarter 2 webinar. Lindsay Abbott, Nielsen's Vice President of the West Region, analyzed retail price and sales trends for the top 10 fruit and vegetable commodities at retail. In today's episode, we cover that report.
Hello, everyone, and I'd like to welcome all of you to today's session. The United Fresh Retail Food Service Board presents Fresh Facts on Retail Q2 2021 Trends Discussion. I'm Miriam Wolk, Vice President of Member Services for United Fresh. Before we begin, I have a few logistics to review with you, and I know you're all webinar and Zoom veterans by now, but thought it would be helpful. All of the attendee connections are currently muted. We do have plenty of time available during the webinar for questions. So at any time during the presentation, feel free to go ahead and drop those questions in the Q&A box at the bottom of your screen. And we will do our best to answer as many questions as we can during the presentation. We're sorry if we can't get to them, but we will follow up with you individually if we don't address them during today's program. As a quick reminder, today's session is being recorded. So if you have colleagues that were unable to join us, we'll be sharing this link with you afterwards for you to share with them as well. The report and webinar wouldn't be possible without the support of our generous sponsor, Mucci Farms. I'd like to go ahead and invite Ajit Saxena, PR and Digital Marketing Manager from Mucci Farms, to share a few words.
Thank you very much, Miriam. As mentioned, my name is Ajit Saxena. I am the PR and Digital Marketing Manager here at Mucci Farms. We are very excited to participate in this webinar once again and to partner with United Fresh and Nielsen for Fresh Facts. If you're unfamiliar with us, we are a vertically integrated grower with operations in Ontario, Michigan, Ohio, Texas, and most recently, very excited to announce that we are also in California. So now we are officially coast to coast and growing a variety of tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, lettuce, strawberries, and always looking for new innovative commodities and ways to improve our efficiencies. Best thing about our company is that we can take care of retailers from end to end through vertical integration, from seed to retail, and everything in between. We are truly a one-stop shop. On behalf of Mucci Farms, I want to thank United Fresh and Nielsen for the opportunity to be a part of Fresh Facts once again. As a data-driven organization, we see the value in Fresh Facts and hope that you will as well. So thank you again, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the webinar.
Thanks, Ajit, and congrats on the expansion. That's really exciting news. All right. So now I'd like to go ahead and turn it over to Lindsay Abbott Wheeler, VP of the West Region for Nielsen IQ, to kick off today's presentation. Lindsay, over to you.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Miriam. And let me share my screen for the team. Perfect. Well, thank you everyone so much for joining us for the webinar today. We're really excited to talk to you about the trends that we see happening across produce within the store and what we're anticipating as we look at the back half of this year, particularly as we head into the holidays. So with that, we are going to touch on a few different elements today. So similar to past webinars, we'll talk about what's happening from that broad perspective, look at some of the top 10 commodity trends. We will spotlight some select categories today, talk about some big growth areas in value-added fruits and vegetables, organics, and lastly, do a final spotlight on salad kits in the store. So to start off, we first wanted to talk about what the trends are overall. So no surprise to anyone, it's been an interesting and challenging year. We thought we left a lot of that behind us in 2020, yet still 2021 has brought its own challenges and opportunities, whether that be from supply challenges or the inflationary trends that we see in the market. So looking specifically at the latest 13 weeks that ended July of this year for Q2 versus the past 2 years, we see that versus the height of the pandemic stock up of last year, we have declines both from a dollar as well as from a volume perspective within meats, produce, and seafood. However, when we compare to 2019, we still see that all of these key departments in store are actually up in dollars, again, driven by some of those inflationary trends. And when we compare to some of the other core departments, like dairy, frozen, and grocery, we see a very similar trend, again, with declines versus that height of the stock up from 2020, but that inflationary trend still driving growth within dollars, as well as some positives within units. So at this point, up into July, we've seen that consumers are paying across the store on average about 2.7 points more than they did of July last year. And that's even heightened when we look at departments like grocery, which are up about 5.6 points versus a year ago. So one of the things we're keeping a close look on is that inflationary trend and what we continue to expect to see through rest of year. Now, as we specifically look and delve a little bit further into produce, now looking at fruits, vegetables, and then remaining mixed packs, what we can see actually is that same trend. So versus 2020, we are down in vegetables from a dollar perspective, but we also see some positives when we look at fruits. So fruits are still up from a dollar perspective, driven by a lot of those inflationary trends, and we'll delve into some of those categories in just a moment. However, when we look to 2019, we're still up both from a volume as well as from a dollar perspective. Now, one of the interesting things that we wanted to flag is just what's changing in regards to household trips to the store. So during the pandemic, we obviously saw a lot of trips moving online versus being directed to the brick and mortar stores. Post-pandemic, we still see a lot of people have found time savings and efficiency by continuing some of that omni-shopping. So being able to purchase online, click and collect in store, or deliver to home. Now, when we look at trips as a total, interestingly for fresh, which also includes meats and bakery, et cetera, we actually see that trips are up across the board slightly at about 1.3%. However, produce is lagging and actually down at 3%. Traditionally, produce has been a big trip driver for a lot of retailers, particularly those as we try and bring consumers back to brick and mortar shopping. So this is a great opportunity for folks on the phone to partner with retailers to really help drive some of those trips as we go forward. So next, we wanted to delve a little farther into produce by looking at some of the top 10 commodity trends. So first, we wanted to start off with fruit. And as mentioned, in fruit, we saw a lot of that growth in dollars happening, really driven by some of those core inflationary trends, particularly within strawberries, as well as within raspberries. And as everyone knows, those are very all year round staples, helping things like snacking, healthy eating, and obviously in particular interest to young children in regards to strawberries. So what we expect to see is obviously a strong summer and continued strong purchasing through rest of year, and likely the continuation of those inflationary trends. Another key highlight that we wanted to note on this slide was mandarins. So mandarins have had some really good weather. So that favorable weather has really helped supply, not just here in the US, but across all the different grow regions globally. Mandarins also I tend to think of as being almost in that value add category, in that easy to peel fruit and consuming nature for the products, really make it easy for school lunches, for quick snacks on the go, for people who are working. So we see really strong growth within mandarins and expect that to continue, especially as we head into or further into cold and flu season and see folks wanting to make sure that they have that vitamin C bump. And lastly, we're going to talk a little bit more about it in just a moment, but we still see some of those headwinds in regards to bananas, still with impact from the force majeure earlier in the year. But what we do expect is bananas to start rebounding. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. Now, moving on to vegetables, as we take a look at vegetables, slightly different picture than fruit. So we see more declines across the board, both from a dollar as well as from a volume standpoint versus 2020. So again, a lot of the vegetables on this list are really staples of the household. So things like potatoes and onions were in big demand during the pandemic as they last a little bit longer, the root vegetables. So we are lapping still some of that high volume of the previous year. And when we look and compared to 2019, we can see that volume is still quite strong across the vast majority of categories. Now, the one thing I will call out is we do see some interesting deflationary trends, so particularly within tomatoes and bell peppers. So something that we'll continue to watch as we progress throughout the year to see if there is any change there, especially with more of the greenhouse products within the winter time. Now, moving on to the next slide, we always like to highlight and just give a quick update on what's happening with packaged salads overall. So similar to past conversations, Sally Kids are still going strong, and we are going to touch about on them a little bit more at the end of the webinar today. So instead, what I wanted to talk to you on this page was where we see some slight growth in regards to lettuce overall. So lettuce is where we see some of those shredded bags. So things like iceberg lettuce are really hot right now in terms of sales in store. And really, when we think about it, those lettuce options are again allowing people a convenient staple for meals to have on hand within the fridge. So we expect to see some of those trends continuing, and we'll talk a little bit more about the salad kit trends in just a moment.
We have more in segment 3. Our news brief is coming up next. We will be right back.
Network with the top tier of the industry at this year's California Trina Conference, featuring presentations from the top executives from CDFA and California's tree nut commodity boards. Register at WCNGG.com, and we'll see you in Tulare on November 3rd at the California Tree Nut Conference. Does your crop have iron chlorosis? AgroPlante has a solution for you. Traditionally, chelated iron has limitations that AgroPlante's Iron Force does not. Iron Force, with its EDD-HA chelation technology, can turn your plant's iron chlorosis from yellow to green in as little as 15 days, despite unbalanced soil pH and calcareous soils. From organic certified to conventional micronutrients, AgroPlante has the product for you. Call 559-498-0388 or visit us at www.agroplante.com. AgroMiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, AgroMiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, AgroMiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
Here's your news for today. New numbers from USDA are adding more evidence that the U.S. beef herd is shrinking. Gary Crawford has more.
It may not be definitive, but all through last week's new USDA report on cattle feedlot numbers,
the signals continue to point towards smaller cow numbers.
Smaller cow numbers now and into 2022. This from Agriculture Department livestock analyst Shale Shagham. First, placements into feedlots during September were just under 2.2 million head, down 3% from September a year ago. Shagham says most private analysts expected placements to be 1% higher.
The fact that it came in 3% lower, from the standpoint of a market sentiment, we'll probably have a bullish sentiment on fed cattle.
The number of fed cattle marketings during September was just under 1.8 million head. That also down 3% from September a year ago. The October 1st feedlot inventory number, 11.6 million head. That's down 1% from last year. And more telling, within that 11.6 million head in feedlots,
the number of heifers and heifer calves on feed on October 1st was just under 4.5 million head, which was about 2% above a year ago and represented about 38.8% of the total number of cattle on feed. And that's up from 37.6% for the same period last year.
And Shagham says it does not take a Sherlock Holmes to deduce that more heifers and heifer cows in the overall inventory is
a signal that producers are not retaining female stock with the intention of breeding them in the spring.
Add to this an estimated, or subtract from it, an estimated 1% decline from a year ago in the number of cattle outside feedlots, and Shale Shagham says it's a recipe for a reduction in the beef cattle herd and in beef output next year, and possibly for higher cattle prices. Let's take USDA's average of fed steer price last year at this time. It was $104 a hundredweight. Last week, it was $124. And the latest USDA forecast for 2022 calls for an average price of $127.75. That would be more than 6% higher than this year's average price. All this is affecting retail beef prices, USDA economist Carolyn Chelius says. So far in 2021,
for consumers, We're seeing prices continue to increase. Beef and veal prices have increased 6.5% so far.
It could be up to 7.5% by year's end, and she says expect another 2-3% increase next year. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Whether you're purchasing gifts ahead of the holiday season or fuel or cattle feed or more, odds are you are paying more thanks to inflation. CattleFax CEO Randy Block, who recently spoke at the Texas Cattle Feeders Association convention, says inflation is here to stay, impacting everything for the next several years.
I don't know how you can slow it down. You throw this much money in the system and you got an economy that's still not fully back on board and yet headed up, not only in the U.S. but around the globe. But we're going to have some real inflationary pressures to deal with here for the next several years.
For cattle producers and feeders, inflation is being translated into the costs of feed and grain. Drought in hay and cattle country has made winter forage expensive. And at the same time, grain prices are also higher.
You'll see what's going on with feed grain prices, oil prices, energy prices, value of energy in our grains. I think that's the reason that when you look at it relative to the historical supply-demand numbers, corn's about 50 cents a bushel higher than it would typically be given this type of a stocks-to-use ratio.
Ultimately, costs to produce goods and services will trickle down to the folks like cattle producers and feeders, translating into tighter cattle numbers in the future.
I think we'll see cost of gains continue to stay more elevated, you know, just the cost of doing business. Vehicles are going to cost more, steel already costs more, energy costs more, fuel costs more. The list goes on and on and on, and ultimately you've got to pass that down. The wholesale markets have already got a lot of that type of stuff built into them, but we haven't been able to share in that yet at the fed cattle level, but that'll change in here as we work into tighter numbers.
Block's 2022 forecast cash cattle prices to be between $1.20 and $1.60 per pound, with the average price being about $1.35. While that seems like an improvement, at first sight, inflation will most likely keep profits flat. U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai spoke at a recent meeting of the National Chicken Council and discussed the relationship between the U.S. and China. She says her recent interactions with China were intended to bring down the temperature of a trading relationship that's become heated in recent months. Tai describes the relationship between the two largest economies in the world as, quote, a pile of dry tinder. She also says that any potential misunderstanding between the countries is likely to spark a giant fire that could have drastic effects on both nations and the world's economy. We hear a lot about the California port problems and the impact that it's having, but it's not just here. A coalition of Canadian agricultural commodity, transportation, and logistics companies is requesting that Ottawa investigate shipping container industry practices. Dennis Guy reports.
A coalition of Canadian agricultural commodity, transportation, and logistics companies is requesting that Ottawa investigate shipping container industry practices. The group is asking the federal government to open an investigation under Section 49 of the Canada Transportation Act to identify immediate actions that can be taken relating to current supply chain disruptions. The proposed action, referred to as a global container crunch, outlines the impact shipping container shortages is having on supply chains. Container prices have reached record levels. Some shippers have seen the cost of a container rise from $2,500 to as much as $25,000 over the past year and a half. A request for the shipping industry investigation includes the Western Canadian Wheat Growers, Western Canadian Shippers Coalition, Freight Management Association of Canada, Responsible Distribution Canada, and Grain Growers of Canada, along with others. One of those is Pulse Canada. Greg Northey at Pulse Canada says that Canadian pulse crop exports are down nearly 50% in the past year, June to June. Northey says that the Canadian government to date has taken the stance that the industry will sort out the container situation over time. He says the Canadian government can no longer take a passive stance on the issue.
The federal government has jurisdictional responsibility over the transportation system. They're responsible to make sure they have a competitive transportation system, one that's helping the economy, that's governing how their competitive actions, how they're supposed to be servicing customers for marine containers in the supply chain in Canada. And they also have the ability to conduct an investigation whenever the transportation system is being disrupted. They have the power. They have pretty extraordinary powers to deal with issues like this. But the time is now, because it is having such a large impact on the Canadian economy and pretty much every Canadian whenever buying goods.
Shipping containers available to the export-oriented Canadian agricultural sector have become increasingly difficult to secure, and the coalition believes an informal cartel of shippers has begun to exert increasing influence over the flow of containers to and from the Asia-Pacific region. Canada's largest Pacific port, the Port of Vancouver, has been especially hard hit with export backlogs.
Port of Vancouver, you've got, you know, the coming together of marine carriers, you have the terminals that are at the port, you have the railways. One of the things we're asking for, in fact, is to bring together all those players who are dealing with this current container disruption, similar to how they've done in the U.S., where each week they come together and they say, this is the problems that we're facing. We need to identify solutions that are helping the supply chain as opposed to hindering it. The container shipping industry essentially makes the global economy go.
Reporting from Canada, I'm Dennis Guy.
The National Corn Growers Association Thursday announced the winners of its Consider Corn Challenge. Michael Clements has the story.
The winners were announced during the Advanced Bioeconomy Leadership Conference in San Francisco. NCGA Market Development Director Sarah McKay says the contest has 9 winners to date, and the latest contest adds 6 new winners.
What's really exciting about the Consider Corn Challenge is that this was an open innovation contest that has been funded by National Corn Growers Association's Market Development Action Team, tasked with a large part of the demand portfolio for corn. And this open innovation contest really seeks to get some of the newest and latest technologies submitted to the contest, and then we work with them not only in awarding them for their technology, but we continue to work with all the winners from the previous Consider Corn Challenges, help them reach commercialization through leveraging our own connections across the industry and the biotechnology space.
She says the Consider Corn Challenge helps identify new uses for corn, leading to more demand.
So the Market Development Action Team saw a lot of value in the Consider Corn Challenges that we've done to date, because as we look at our farmers becoming more and more efficient in their production and that we still continue to have carryover stocks year to year, how do we find a home for that corn and grind more corn? And that's through things like the technologies that our winners in the Consider Corn Challenge are utilizing.
The 6 winners this year each received $25,000. McKay outlines the winners.
The first winner that we had was actually out of the Department of Energy at the National Renewable Energy Lab around an acrylic nitrile carbon fiber application made from corn, things like a lightweight replacement for steel and aluminum products. The second winner was BioAstra, and their product was an improved cellulose acetate and a new formulation for polylactic acid. Everything from plastic bags that you get from the grocery store to an improved PLA surgical mask. Third winner was a company called Catalyx, and they have utilized a pathway for butanol from ethanol. Another one of our winners was Danimer Scientific. They are making a PHA from corn oil. Basically, they're biodegradable and they're bio-based polymers that can be used for plastics. Lacryl Technologies, they're making a bioacrylic acid from lactic acid. Practical application here being super absorbers. And then our final winner was a company called Silvatex, and their technology is an alternative diesel fuel technology. And essentially what this means is the application would be in off-road diesels.
She adds new uses of corn is a huge focus area for NCGA.
As we look at the value of the corn kernel and all of our current demand uses, the uses doesn't take away anything from our current demand. It only adds to it. And there's a lot of really great fractionation technologies that can be utilized to really optimize the value of that corn kernel. And this is a priority area for our growers to unlock that potential in the corn kernel and also find a home for all the great corn that's produced here in the United States.
Learn more at ncga.com. Michael Clements reporting.
That's our news for today. We continue with the produce retail trends right after this.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. That's, that is there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. We continue now with more from the United Fresh Report. The report includes seasonal category deep dives on bananas, broccoli, cherries, and onions, with year-to-year comparisons of the last 3 years' quarter four results to aid in planning for a successful quarter four in 2021. Here's more of that report.
So next, what we wanted to do is do a category spotlight on some select categories. Now, in this section, we're going to be changing the periods that we're looking at. We're going to look at that performance in Q4 of 2020 to help us anticipate what we expect to see as we progress through this year. We'll also be looking at a trend from the last two quarters, so Q1 and Q2 of 2021, as we see what is happening across some of these core categories. Now, as mentioned, we were going to return to bananas. So good news is really since the two hurricanes, Eta and Iota, we have seen that the grow areas are starting to recover. So from that standpoint, we are still facing a lot of those impacts to quality, right, and supply, particularly with the ports being quite busy in a lot of the cities around America. So what we do hope to see as we move across the back half of the year is, again, a steady resurgence within bananas. And we do expect also to continue to see growth amongst organics, particularly as conventional and organic bananas get a little bit closer in terms of pricing and value. So next on the list is broccoli. So another superfood as well as key staple in the consumer's pantry. So with broccoli, we had very strong growth in dollars and units in Q4 of 2020, but we have seen the decline within the first half of 2021. So as we head into the back half, really what we're going to be watching out for is the impact of some of the summer heat on the growth, both in broccoli as well as in cauliflower. So just looking at the latest several weeks as we end here in October, we already see some of the prices going up in relation to those heat impacts on the crops. And so we do expect that inflationary trend to continue. Cherries, one of my favorites. So cherries, again, a very seasonal product. So as we take a look at the trend, we just need to make sure we take that into account. So within Q1 of 21, we saw a little bit of an early bump to the season. So you do see that trend line really with some strong increases over the year ago period. But what we need to make sure and just take into account is the volume was still low there before we hit kind of the stride of the core season. So what we do expect is, again, that cherries will continue to rebound as we move forward into 2022 and the next grow season. And what we also see as trends in cherries is the growth in organic, although still not as strong as we see in other produce categories. Interest is increasing amongst health-minded consumers, particularly in that age group of around 30s to 40s. We also see a lot of the growers starting to invest and look at other improved varieties as well. So while Rainier Cherry still maintains its kind of tent pole as the premium offering that consumers are looking for, we expect there to be more variety and innovation in cherries as we go forward. Onions. So onions have been in the news a lot recently. So again, onions really benefited throughout the pandemic as a staple and root vegetable that can last a long time in people's pantries. And we do see, similar to other categories, that decline in the first half as we lap those pandemic volumes. Now, while we had originally expected there to be some good rebound as we hit the holiday seasons, giving onions kind of key staples, an ingredient in a lot of recipes, the recent salmonella outbreak has been affecting, obviously, those sales. So what we're going to be watching closely is what happens as we head into Thanksgiving. Onions, as you know, core part of stuffing as well as turkey soup. So it'll be interesting to see if volumes continue to be impacted or if, as weeks go by, consumers start to forget about some of those warnings and really just look for those core ingredients that they need to make their Thanksgiving table. So after those category spotlights, we still wanted to talk about another core growth driver within produce as a whole, and that's value-added fruits and vegetables. So not surprisingly, these continue to grow very strongly. And really, as again, children went back to school, parents are working again, everyone is time strapped, folks are looking for that convenient yet healthy option to be able to add to lunches and snacks. And interestingly, this is also a spot where there's just a ton of innovation. So meal prep in particular is driving a lot of this growth from anything like sheet pan vegetables with spices or dressing, so very easy for the consumer to be able to cook and prep for dinner, to kits to allow you to help make that meal you desire, whether it be stir fry or even omelets. So we've seen some products out of Canada with omelet assistant kits to be able to include ingredients. Throughout the barbecue season, we also saw value add offerings where you had all the toppings ready to go to simply put them on your burger. So no cutting, no prep required for your chef. And then lastly, as we head into the cold and flu season, we've definitely seen more of value add offerings around carrots, onions, and celery to be able to help make your homemade chicken soup and fight that cold season. So we expect to continue to see a lot of growth both within fruit as well in vegetables in this value add space. Now, when we take a look at the top categories across produce for value add, not surprisingly, a lot of them are those kind of harder to deal with fruits. So things like watermelons and pineapples, cantaloupes, which are hard for a consumer to be able to cut through and core. So from that perspective, people again are looking for that convenience as well as healthy option to be able to purchase those. We also see some strong signs as deli has really been able to bounce back within store with more trips to brick and mortar. Again, that's also supporting the growth that we see within value add. Organic. So another spotlight that we can't forget, as organic continues to be a really important purchase driver for the consumer. Now, as we went through the pandemic, as people were looking to make the healthy choice and also being concerned about how much touch there was, right, to the fruits and vegetables that they were buying, organic became a really important purchase driver for fruits and vegetables. That is still the case, although very much like the trends we saw overall in produce, as we look to volume versus 2020, we do see some softness or declines. Again, a lot of that is lapping the COVID period, and we expect to see that rebound as we head into the back half of the year. The last thing that I'll call out is, as mentioned, the pandemic did shift a lot of people's purchasing preferences towards organic. And the other thing that's really interesting, we mentioned it on bananas, but we also see that gap between conventional and organic produce pricing really starting to narrow. So more of that easy trade up for the consumer, especially given that health connotation in regards to the value. So similar trends as we look across our top 10 categories in produce. And again, we're going to talk about packaged salads in just a minute. So what I'd like to do here is again, highlight a little bit in regards to lettuce. So lettuce obviously has again been facing some of those labor shortages in the fields overall, which has definitely been a headwind. However, when we start to take a look at new items Nielsen is tracking and what's coming into the database, we see a lot coming in around hydroponics and greenhouse. And this is bringing not just new products into the mix, but actually a lot of new players, within that category as well. So again, with that controlled environment, organic offerings, and a better sense of supply for some of those products, this is a great entry point, right, for those offerings. The key question and what we're looking at as we go forward is really what consumers' reactions are going to be, and if this is going to be a true decision driver in terms of purchase. And continuing that discussion around lettuce and salads, we next wanted to talk a little bit more about salad kits. So as you've seen over the last few Fresh Fact webinars, salad kits have continued their growth over time. Now, this is pretty exciting as well. So when we start to delve down and understand what's truly driving some of that growth for the kits, we see that it's what we call total distribution points, or TDPs. And that really tells us that we're seeing an increase in distribution and also the breadth of distribution as well as depth.
So really what that comes back to is that core innovation that we're seeing within this category in store. So a lot of different flavors are coming out, which are really helping to drive consumer purchase and excitement. So anything from, new iterations on classic flavors like Buffalo Ranch to really differentiate things. So dill pickle has been a hot trend this year, not just in salads, but also in potato chips. So we've seen that dill pickle option in store, as well as even things like everything bagel seasonings as a flavor type. So innovation bringing a lot of excitement and helping drive growth when we look at total distribution points. The other thing is velocity, and that velocity strength still continues. Again, as people are eating a lot in home, and it's folks still working at home as well that are looking for quick lunch options, center of plate options, as well as just a side dish for dinner. So we expect to see this growth continue as it's dominated again by that healthy choice for the consumer and convenience. The last thing I'll mention on this slide is, again, this is a category that has faced a lot of supply issues. So retailers have been really agile in looking to swap out products, to figure out those supply issues and ensure that the consumer has options. And that's even extended into promos. So while we see a lot of those causal or promotional measures here on the chart aren't really contributing to the growth at present, I think it's interesting that retailers have really been agile again and even offered promotions across brands versus one brand at a time and focusing on different varieties or flavors, but instead offered promotions like 2 for $6 across multiple brands. So interesting ways to think about, again, how that growth will be fueled as we move forward. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that private label trend. So just as we see here on the chart, private label is posting some really strong growth, and they'll continue to do so within salad kits. What we're seeing is as consumers are looking to make decisions on shelf, they're looking at the bag, looking at the freshness of the lettuce, and noting that private label's quality is very good across those products. They're also looking at that price and that trade-off. So we do expect to continue to see that private label growth and trend. So what does that mean for branded players? Well, they're still experiencing growth, and really they're the ones who are bringing a lot of that innovation that we talked about on the last slide in terms of flavors and different combinations. So while on the left-hand side of the chart, we still see that classics like Caesar are extremely popular. We see that growth coming from remaining variety where we'd have some of those differentiated flavors. So innovation, again, will continue to be a core differentiator within this category. Perfect. So that takes us to the end of the presentation.
We'll be right back.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236. Or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
The annual events surrounding the presentation of what's known as the Nobel Prize of Food and Agriculture make for a week-long celebration of efforts in the realm of improving global food security. Rod Bain recaps this year's World Food Prize Week, including sessions within the Norman Borlaug Dialogue in this edition of Agriculture USA.
It's an annual gathering celebrating the achievement known as the Nobel Prize of Food and Agriculture, the World Food Prize.
Thanks to this award, the world is finally waking up to the unmatched potential of aquatic foods to improve nutrition and public health in low and middle-income countries.
The 2021 World Food Prize laureate, Shakuntala Haraksingh Tilstead, accepting the honor during the recent laureate award presentation. But more than ceremonies, it is a week of events in Des Moines, Iowa, and virtually, focused on discussions of and solutions towards global food security, most centered around the dialogue named for World Food Prize founder and Nobel Prize recipient Dr. Norman Borlaug.
I think we now see the responsibility that we have collectively to address aggressively the issue of food insecurity and nutrition insecurity throughout the world.
I'm Rod Bain. I'm joined by Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and others as we look at World Food Prize Week 2021 in this edition of Agriculture USA. It was the late Norman Borlaug who developed the World Food Prize to honor and promote efforts in global food security. The agronomist earned the nickname the Father of the Green Revolution for his groundbreaking, award-winning efforts that led to new crop development in Mexico, India, and Pakistan, with his work attributed to saving the lives of nearly 1 billion food insecure people worldwide.
You can't build peace on empty stomachs and human misery, as Lloyd Boyd Orr, the first director of FAO, said many years ago.
Borlaug from a 2009 speech at North Carolina State University. For 2021, the focus on food security going forward was featured in this year's World Food Prize Week events and its theme of gaining momentum, food systems transformation in the decade of action. That included various sessions and side events within the annual Norman Borlaug Dialogue, with events held both in Des Moines, Iowa, and virtually.
A small change in soil carbon stock can make a big change in the atmosphere and vice versa.
Ohio State University's Ratan Lal, the 2020 World Food Prize winner, discussed decarbonization of the ag sector through climate smart innovation in one such panel discussion. North Carolina State University's Naseeb Mogwanya was among those covering the subject of reconciling agroecology and biotechnology to address global food security.
Addressing these challenges needs not either biotech or agroecology, but both.
This year's World Food Prize laureate, Shakuntala Haraksingh Tilstead, discussed efforts to expand aquaculture as a resource to provide greater food security worldwide. Her research in this focus, among the reasons for her honor.
There would be much more focus on production, whereas today it's taking into account a more holistic approach, and it takes into account the very many different aspects that affect food and nutrition security.
The event allowed North American agricultural leaders opportunity to dialogue about ways to work together to find pathways for more sustainable global food systems.
I think it's important and necessary for us as we are developing and thinking anew and transforming our food and agriculture system to look at ways in which we can create more new and better markets.
I'm optimistic. As happened in the human history, science always comes to rescue when we are facing problems.
We have a very conscious commitment making sure that our agriculture is sustainable and that we can feed the world. The consumers are also expecting a lot from all of us.
U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, Mexican Agriculture Secretary Victor Manuel Villalobos, and Canadian Agriculture and Agri-Food Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau, respectively. Secretary Vilsack, in his home state of Iowa, was among those attending the annual World Food Prize Laureate Award ceremonies.
Are you ready? Are you ready for it?
Featuring the music of Kiss, a and the acceptance of the World Food Prize by laureate Shakuntala Raksingh Tilstad.
Looking ahead to the future, a sustainable food systems transformation will not be possible without due attention and investment given to aquatic foods alongside crops and livestock.
The event also honored the memory of World Food Prize Chair John Ruan III, who passed away in September. This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. From the JCS Marketing Team, thanks for listening.